but his nose, ruined by a lifetime of tobacco, let him down. He felt a stab of sadness, as he always did at this time of year. The grass and flowers would soon be gone. The steppe spring was brief, as tragically brief as life itself. He reached the range. It was a place of steel towers pointing to the sky, of enormous concrete mounds. The Cosmodrome, far vaster than its western competitors, covered thousands of square kilometers of this empty land. Much of it was abandoned now, of course, and the great gantries were rusting slowly in the dry air, or else had been pulled down for scrap, with or without the consent of the authorities. But this morning there was much activity around one pad. He could see technicians in their protective suits and orange hats scurrying around the great gantry like faithful at the feet of some immense god. A voice floated across the steppe from a speaker tower.
Gotovnosti, 10 minut.
10 minutes and counting. The walk from the car to the viewing stand, short as it was, tired him greatly. He tried to ignore the hammering of his recalcitrant heart, the prickling of sweat over his neck and brow, his gasping breathlessness, the stiff pain that plagued his arm and neck. As he took his place, those already here greeted him. There were the corpulent, complacent men and women who, in this new Russia, moved seamlessly between legitimate authority and murky underworld. And there were young technicians, like all of the new generations, rat-faced with the hunger that had plagued his country since the fall of the Soviet Union. He accepted their greetings, but was happy to sink into isolated anonymity. The men and women of this hard future cared nothing for him and his memories of a better past. And nor did they care much for what was about to happen here. All their gossip was of events far away, of Hiram Patterson and his wormholes, his promise to make the earth itself as transparent as glass. It was very obvious to Vitali that he was the oldest person here, the last survivor of the old days, perhaps. That thought gave him a certain sour pleasure. It was, in fact, almost exactly 70 years since the launch of the first Molnaya, Lightning, in 1965. It might have been 70 days, so vivid were the events in Vitali's mind, when the young army of scientists, rocket engineers, technicians, laborers, cooks, carpenters, and masons had come to this unpromising steppe and, living in huts and tents, alternately baking and freezing, armed with little but their dedication and Korolev's genius, had built and launched mankind's first spaceships. The design of the Molnaya satellites had been utterly ingenious. Korolev's great boosters were incapable of launching a satellite to geosynchronous orbit, that high radius where the station would hover above a fixed point on Earth's surface. So Korolev launched his satellites on elliptical 8-hour trajectories. With such orbits, carefully chosen, 3 Molnayas could provide coverage for most of the Soviet Union. For decades, the USSR and then Russia had maintained constellations of Molnayas in their eccentric orbits, providing the great, sprawling country with essential social and economic unity. Vitali regarded the Molnaya commsats as Korolev's greatest achievement, outshining even the designer's accomplishments in launching robots and humans into space, touching Mars and Venus, even so nearly beating the Americans to the moon. But now, perhaps, the need for those marvelous birds was dying at last. The great launch tower rolled back, and the last power umbilicals fell away, writhing slowly like fat black snakes. The slim form of the booster itself was revealed, a needle shape with the Baroque fluting typical of Korolev's antique, marvelous, utterly reliable designs. Although the sun was now high in the sky, the rocket was bathed in brilliant artificial light, wreathed in vapor breathed by the mass of cryogenic fuels in its tanks.
3, 2, 1, zasheganye.
Ignition. As Kate Manzoni approached the Our World campus, she wondered if she had contrived to be a little more than fashionably just late enough for this spectacular event, so brightly was the Washington State sky painted by Hiram Patterson's light show. Small planes crisscrossed the sky, maintaining a layer of, no doubt environmentally friendly, dust on which the lasers painted virtual images of a turning Earth. Every few seconds, the globe turned transparent to reveal the familiar Our World corporate logo embedded in its core. It was all utterly tacky, of course, and it only served to obscure the real beauty of the tall, clear night sky.